The three thieves were either supremely overconfident or not very good at their calling. The Rangers took them by complete surprise. They looked at their captors with disbelief for the few seconds the Rangers required to take charge of their weapons. One made a grab for a rifle just as Brackett picked it up.
Y'all just sit right still and don't twitch an eyebrow. Brackett, you and Johnny, put the handcuffs on them.
You said they wouldn't come after us because we didn't get none of their horses. I told you we shouldn't have built that fire like that.
Blood trickled down the forehead of the thief that Brackett had struck.
It was you that kept hollering about being hungry and wanting to stop and eat.
The third thief sat quietly and looked frightened. He was a boy of perhaps 14 or 15 years. His wrists were so thin that Brackett couldn't make the cuffs fit tightly.
What's your name, son?
The lad would not look at Holloway, nor did he answer.
Son, is one of these men your daddy?
Hell no, they ain't. They're friends of mine.
Holloway asked the men their names, though he already knew from their Confederate's confession back at the Ranger camp. One said he was John Smith. The other was John Jones. Holloway made a wry smile.
Smith and Jones. I've arrested a lot of your kinfolks in my time.
We're from big families.
Of all the victims you could have picked, what made you think you could get away with a raid on Ranger horses?
We don't know nothing about no Ranger horses. We're just honest settlers minding our own business, looking for a place to make our homes.
I don't think you'll need to worry about a home for the next few years. The state of Texas is fixing to give you one. Then maybe I can help get your terms shortened, if you'll talk to me straight.
Straight about what?
Whatever I decide to ask you.
Holloway turned to the boy, who by now seemed to have lost most of his fear.
I'm asking you again, son. What is your name?
Brown. Bobby Brown.
Jones, Smith, and Brown. You got yourself tied in with some real gallows bait, son. They'll get you nothing except a hard life and an early death.
I already had the hard life. Maybe death ain't so bad.
Don't you believe in hell?
Hell can't be no worse than what I already had. And the devil can't be no meaner than some people I know.
It wasn't us. We've been good to him. Treating him like a kid brother almost.
Teaching him to be like you?
Teaching him how to get along in a hard world. Every boy needs to learn a trade.
Some trade, stealing horses.
We ain't stole no horses. You see any of your horses in this camp?
It's not because you didn't try. We ought to hang the two of you right here for leading this kid astray.
Wasn't nobody around to take care of me after my mama died. My daddy's in jail. Gonna be there for a long time. Artis and Brewster, they picked me up and let me come along with them. Didn't nobody else care if I lived or died.
Artis and Brewster? Not Jones?
Them's our middle names.
Part of a deer carcass was hanging from a cedar limb, a butcher knife stuck in it.
Well, Artis and Brewster, I'm grateful to y'all for providing that venison. We've made do on cold biscuits and air all day.
Holloway jerked his head toward the deer. Tanner moved quickly to the task. After eating his fill, Holloway fetched the fugitive book from his saddlebag.
Artis Wilkes and Brewster Pardo. Both of your names are on the list. You're wanted for several things besides horse stealing.
And we always get blamed for things we didn't do.
According to our information, the boy's name is Scooter. But Scooter's not a Christian name.
Ain't heard no other given name but Scooter. His last name's Tennyson.
Now that's more like it. See? It's not hard to talk to Rangers.
We don't have much choice when you got guns on us.
At least we know what names to put on your headboards if you all give us any trouble. Every man ought to have his right name on his headboard.
Later, chewing on a half-broiled strip of meat, Andy studied Scooter Tennyson. He looked as if he'd been brought up in a brush thicket. His hair was a tangle. Someone had made a bad effort at cutting it, leaving a ragged job that looked more like the work of a butcher knife than of scissors. His shirt was too large for his thin frame. It hung on him like a partially collapsed tent. His trousers, also too big, had patches on both knees and holes in both patches.
What'll happen to the kid when we take him in?
Yeah, the state has got a home for boys like this.
It's like a junior penitentiary, isn't it?
Pretty much, I guess. I've never seen it.
Doesn't seem right. He's never had much of a chance.
Yeah, he's old enough to know right from wrong. Some people set out on a crooked trail earlier than others. He said his dad is in jail. It's probably in the blood.
I don't believe that. I'll bet if he was among decent folks a while, he'd straighten out.
Maybe. You want the job?
I don't know that I'm the one to do it. I'm not but a few years older than him, and I've got a job as a ranger.
I'll talk to the captain when we get back to camp. Maybe he'll see his way clear to do something for the boy. What's your interest in him?
Maybe it's because when I look at him, I see what could have become of me.
Talking to Scooter was like talking to a post. The boy turned away and made a show of ignoring Andy.
I'm just trying to help you, kid.
Don't need your help. Don't need nothing but a good leaving alone.
You won't get much leaving alone if they put you behind bars.
Maybe that's what I was born for.
Nobody's born for a life like that. They choose it or get pushed into it. Looks to me like you've been pushed. I'd like to see you get a decent chance.
You a preacher or something?
No, I'm just a ranger. And a new one at that. Mostly, I guess you'd say I've been a farmer.
Then go back to your plow and leave me alone.
Andy caught a look from Holloway that said for him to ease off. The boy pulled away from Andy and closer to his outlaw friends. Holloway beckoned Andy away from the campfire, out into the darkness.
You're wasting your breath.
Maybe he hasn't had time to understand the trouble he's in. Once he does, he might be easier to talk to. It took me a while when I was where he's at.
You know, I once tried to raise an orphan coyote pup. Thought since I'd caught him young, he'd train like a dog, but he never did. He never was anything but a wild, chicken-killing coyote. I finally caught him killing a baby calf. Bad as I hated to, I had to shoot him.
There were folks who thought the same thing of me, coming out of a Comanche camp.
Well, from what Tanner has told me, some good folks took an interest and set you right.
Maybe that's all Scooter needs.
I think you're putting yourself in for disappointment, but I'll talk to the captain.
Andy went back and sat down near Scooter, trying to think of an approach that might work. It was Scooter who made the approach.
I heard some of what you're saying out there. What's this about you and the Comanches?
They killed my folks and carried me off when I was little. Raised me for several years. I was luckier than you. Some good people cared enough to take me in and give me a home.
I never found no good people except Arliss and Brewster. Arliss was in jail a while with my daddy. He got a notion daddy'd buried some money someplace and I might know where it was. My daddy never had enough money that he could afford to bury any.
Arliss and Brewster aren't the kind you ought to be traveling with.
They're all I got. We come across a feller a few days ago. He was nice to me. Him and Arliss and Brewster robbed a little bank over at a burg called Brownwood. But he didn't cotton to the notion of stealing ranger horses, nor going further west. Said there weren't no banks out there. So he left us. Kinda wish he'd stayed. Seemed smarter than Arliss and Brewster. Maybe we wouldn't have gotten ourselves caught.
You were bound to get caught sooner or later.
I felt kinda sorry for him. Said his wife got shot a while back. He was still taking it hard.
Who was he? Did he give a name?
Bascom, it was? Yeah, Bascom. At least, that's what he told us.
Corey Bascom?
I believe so.
Did he say where he was going?
I don't never ask a thing like that. Anybody wants you to know, they'll tell you.
Sometime during the night, Andy awakened to the sound of a running horse.
That damn kid has gotten away!
Andy flung his blanket aside and pulled on the boots he'd put beneath it to protect them from dew. He saw Brackett pick up a pair of handcuffs.
Cuffs were too loose on him. He slipped them off.
Andy, you're so interested in giving the boy a chance, go see if you can catch him and bring him back. Brackett, you better follow along.
Wilkes and Pardo were handcuffed to the trunks of young trees. Scooter had been, too.
Good for the boy. I hope he gets plumb to Mexico.
At least the kid has an eye for horse flesh. He took mine. You'll have to ride hard to catch him.
Andy couldn't see far in the darkness, but the hoofbeats had told him the boy was headed west. He wished he had Long Red with him.
You better slow down. That horse is liable to fall and bust his leg.
Andy saw the dark shape of the fugitive ahead of him, making a crooked trail through the cedar brush and live oaks.
Scooter! Stop!
The chase came to a sudden stop as a low limb caught Scooter across the chest and held him while the sergeant's horse ran on without him. By the time Andy reached him, the boy lay curled up on the ground like a wounded caterpillar.
What the hell were you trying to do? You've just added another horse-stealing charge to your record.
Brackett went after the runaway horse. It stopped when it realized it had lost its rider.
There I was, begging the sergeant to give you a chance. Then you pull a stunt like this.
The boy was not as helpless as he had appeared. He jumped to his feet, pushed Andy aside, and made a grab for the gray horse. Andy caught his shirt and pulled him away, just as the boy's left foot hit the stirrup. Brackett came back, leading the sergeant's horse. He seemed to be enjoying himself.
Looks like that kid's got some badger in him, too. Badger boy.
I guess we can't blame him too much for trying. Get back on the sergeant's horse.
Andy cut a long leather string from his saddle and tied Scooter's hands to the pommel.
I'll bet you don't slip out of that.
The boy tugged at the bonds. The last of his anger drained. Andy wanted to comfort the boy.
Maybe the worst thing you've done is fall in with bad company. They can't do much to you for that.
He's a horse thief.
He's just a little reckless about his borrowing. Seems I remember you taking one of Rusty Shannon's horses once.
I left another one in his place.
One you borrowed from the U.S. Army. Got Rusty into a lot of trouble.
That was a whole other time. Things are different now. And this boy ain't you. He's something else entirely. Pretty soon you'll be wishing you never seen him.
Andy already wished that. But he had seen him, and he could not give up on him any more than Rusty Shannon had given up on a half-wild kid named Badger Boy. Rusty Shannon leaned on the hoe and looked across the field at the weeds still to be chopped out of his growing corn. It was a job without an end, for before he could get the last row finished, the first would need hoeing again. He missed Andy and Tanner. Andy had always been a diligent worker. Tanner could be, too, when the mood was upon him and he wasn't fidgeting to go somewhere. Rusty recognized Sheriff Tom Blessing's big horse coming in on the trail from town. He gratefully carried the hoe to the turn row and laid it down.
Ah, your corn's looking good.
Not as good as the weeds.
You need to go to town and hire a boy or two to help you.
I wouldn't want to take anybody away from school.
School's out, and working in the fields will teach you more practical stuff than studying about the history of England and all them other places a long ways off from here.
I'll think about it. How's Mrs. Blessing?
Better every day, thanks to Alice. Ain't you gonna ask me about Alice?
How's Alice?
She's a good-hearted girl. Homesick, of course. And she's still afraid you resent her, because she's alive and her sister's not.
I know it wasn't her fault, except for her bad judgment in marrying Corey Bascom.
Speaking of Corey Bascom...
Tom reached into his shirt pocket.
While I was at the post office getting my mail, I found you had a letter. It's from Andy. He thinks he's got a line on your man.
The envelope had been opened. Tom had read the letter. Rusty didn't mind. He had far too much privacy out here anyway, living by himself. He hurried to unfold the letter, running his finger along the lines as he read.
They sent Andy and Len to a frontier ranger company camped way out on the San Saba River. That's where he heard about Corey Bascom.
Rusty hurried ahead to the part of the letter that told about a kid who had ridden a short time with Bascom. His hands shook so that it was difficult to read the lines.
Reckon how many days it'll take me to get to that camp?
A bunch. It's liable to be a cold trail anyway.
No colder than others I've tried. At least we know Bascom has been there, or close by. I've never been that far out yonder way.
Rusty started walking toward the barn. Tom followed close behind.
Me and my boys will keep an eye on the place while you're gone. You can't guarantee to cut all the weeds down, though. If a man could get his crops to grow as good as his weeds...
To hell with the weeds.
What about that hoe you left laying out there?
To hell with the hoe, too. I've got some country to cover.
Together, Rusty and Tom sketched out a rough map.
You've been to Austin, so you know the road that far. From there, you'll head west into the hills. I'm a little hazy about the towns, but you'll pass through some German settlements, like Friedrichsburg. From what Andy says in the letter, the camp is west of Fort Mason, close to a settlement called Menardville. The fella told me he saw ruins of an old Spanish mission there. Jim Bowie's the name carved over the gate.
I'll ask directions as I go along.
I wouldn't be telling everybody my business, was I you. There's some wild old boys out yonder. They may get hostile if they find out you're after one of their own kind.
I take pretty good care of myself.
You haven't always. I've seen a couple of your scars. Don't worry about your farm, and don't worry about Alice. Me and the missus never had a daughter before. It's nice having one, for a while.
Rusty packed a smokehouse ham and a slab of bacon, as well as flour and salt and coffee. There'd been a time he could usually sustain himself on wild game for days on end. But wherever settlers moved in, the game tended to thin out. He saddled the bay horse and tied his pack onto a fancy-stepping Spanish mule he had acquired at a trade day in town.
I never trusted them little mules. They can kick so fast you can't see it coming. They'll break your leg before you can spit.
I'll be careful. Yeah.
Anything you want me to tell Alice?
Just don't let any strangers see her.
In his eagerness, he rode far into the first night and had to search in the darkness for a grassy spot to stake the horse and mule and for wood to build a fire. He resolved not to do that again. The road was familiar as far as Austin. He wasted no time there reminiscing about last January's confrontation over the possession of the state capital. He sought directions and nothing else. He found the topography changed abruptly west of Austin. The road led into rocky, cedar-covered hills and scattered live oak motts. The land was drier. He wondered at the feasibility of cultivating it. Settlers so far had restricted the plow to valley flats. A scattering of cattle, sheep, and Mexican goats made use of the hillsides, grazing the short grass, browsing whatever parts of the brushy plants were edible. The buildings were mostly of native stone, the individual pieces carefully chiseled to fit closely together. The roofs were shingled with cypress, which some artisan had trimmed to just the proper dimensions. His second night out of Austin, he reached the German town Tom had told him about, Friedrichsburg. He quickly began asking questions. A friendly storekeeper told him that Fort Mason was 40 miles away. 2 days later, he reached the town toward mid-morning. Riding in, he noticed that people watched him with suspicion. It was much like the reception he had received in Austin some months ago, when that place was threatened with violence over the possession of the governor's office. The proprietor of the store where he chose to stop had a grim countenance. He offered no pleasantries, but simply sacked up some flour and coffee beans and laid them on the counter. His mistrust was palpable, though his manner was civil.
Where do I find the road to Menardville?
You do not stay here?
Just passing through. Got business at a ranger camp over there.
You are not here for the trouble?
Whatever your troubles may be, they're none of mine.
Leaving the store, Rusty found three men standing in the dirt street, watching him. Their grim faces indicated that their intentions were not benign. Rusty tied his provisions on the little Spanish pack mule, then turned to face the men.
You all got business with me?
We got business with any stranger that drifts into town. How come you stop at that Dutchman's store?
It was the first one I saw.
Around here these days, a man's got to know which side of the fence he stands on. There's them, and there's us. Which are you?
Neither. I'm a passing stranger, and I'm fixing to pass. I didn't come all this way to get tangled up in somebody else's fight.
Looking back, Rusty saw that they had caught up horses and trailed behind him. He suspected they would follow him out of town, then challenge him, or perhaps even waylay him. He decided to meet their challenge here and now. Reaching down, he brought up his rifle. He turned abruptly and faced them.
I can find my own way. I'm not looking for any escort.
Just because you talk good English don't mean you're all right. There's some Americans around here siding with the Dutchman. I'm gonna see what you got on that pack mule and make sure you ain't smuggling guns.
Dismounting, the man walked up to the pack mule and reached for the rope that held the pack in place. The little mule whirled half around and kicked him on the leg.
My leg! That damn beast broke my leg!
Rusty spurred the bay into a fast trot toward the Menardville Road. The little mule had to trot extra fast to keep up. He met a horseman wearing a badge and found him to be a deputy sheriff. What was that argument down yonder?
No argument. Some fella got a little too close to a mule.
Stranger, ain't you?
First time I was ever here. Nice looking town, but it's got some testy citizens.
Was I you? I wouldn't linger. Them boys yonder belong to one side. They probably suspicion that you've come to throw in with the other. Or maybe that's why you're here.
I'm just trying to find my way to a ranger camp over on the San Saba.
You a ranger?
Used to be.
You're in luck. Been some rangers in town trying to stop trouble. A couple of them are fixing to report back to camp. If you was to ride along with them, nobody'd bother you none.
Just point me to where they're at.
This used to be a pretty good town. We'll be again when we get rid of a few rotten apples. Rusty was pleased to find Jim and Johnny Morris preparing to leave Mason. He had a feeling the deputy did not fully trust him until he saw the welcome the brothers gave him, bumping his hand happily. The three men who had accosted him made no attempt to follow. He mentioned that to the Morris brothers.
You're in West Texas. A lot of Frisco boys come here when they wore out their welcome everywhere else. Mason's not the only place that's got a two-bit local feud going on.
If you think there's some hard hombres here, you ought to see Junction City.
Ooh. Right now, I'm just looking for Andy.
I hope you ain't come to take him home. Andy's took the rangering like a duck takes the water.
No, I felt that way myself once. I won't try to get him to quit.
Why don't you join up with us? Captain's still got some openings left. You can see how bad the Rangers are needed out here.
I have my farm to worry about, and other things.
We know about the other things. Len Tanner told us.
Yeah, that boy Scooter's still in camp, rougher than a corn cob. And he's trying to work the rough edges off him, but that kid's got a coyote eye. I wouldn't want him sneaking up behind me.
He thinks the boy might give me a lead on Corey Bascom, the man I've been looking for.
Captain's already made inquiries about the bank robbery. And he talked to them three horse thieves till he was blue in the face, but he didn't find out much about Bascom. It's been so long now that I'm afraid you won't be able to pick up a trail.
Yeah, well, I'd like to talk to the boy anyhow.
Getting him to talk to you will be the hard part. He can cuss like a mule skinner, but he don't put out much information.
Sight of the ranger encampment brought back memories, most pleasant, a few painful. It looked much like the wartime camp he remembered far to the north, near Fort Belknap. This one appeared better equipped, but the state's Confederate government had always teetered on the edge of bankruptcy. Necessities had been scarce, luxuries not even considered. Post-war Texas was hardly wealthy, but it was better off than 10 years ago.
I'll introduce you to the captain.
I'm much obliged.
Rusty remembered meeting the captain a long time back.
Welcome to camp, Mr. Shannon. I hope that you have come to enlist.
No, sir. I have other business here.
Sergeant Holloway walked into the headquarters tent. Recognition was immediate, and he grasped Rusty's hand.
Captain, me and Rusty rode together up at Fort Belknap. Chased outlaws and Indians. Even caught a few now and then.
If you've not come to join us, what brings you so far west?
Rusty explained about his mission and showed Andy's letter. The captain nodded grimly.
Well, I'm afraid you've come a long way for nothing. We interrogated the three prisoners at considerable length before we sent them away to jail. All we got out of them was that a man named Bascom was with him in the bank robbery. He left him before they made a try at our horses. I sent a man out to try to pick up a trail, but evidently your man traveled a public road long enough to mix his tracks with 100 others.
What about the boy?
He's still here in camp, to everybody's regret. Private Pickard thinks he can redeem him. I'd had about as leave try to redeem a wildcat cub.
And he's got a good heart.
One that outweighs his judgment, I am sad to say. I'd have already sent that young heathen back east to the dubious mercy of the court if Pickett hadn't put up such an argument for him. But that boy has pushed me almost to the end of my tether.
The captain glanced at Holloway.
Where is Pickard?
Out on horse guard.
Now send someone to replace him and tell him he has company.
The captain gave Rusty a quiet and calculating study.
This company could use a man of your experience. Are you sure you wouldn't like to enlist?
It wouldn't be fair to you. The first time I heard something new about Corey Bascom, I'd be up and gone.
Andy arrived at the headquarters tent a few minutes later. Rusty imagined he looked older and more mature, but only a few weeks had passed since they'd last seen one another.
I got your letter.
I didn't realize how long it would take you to get it, and how long it'd take you to reach here. I'm afraid you've wasted the trip.
I'd still like to talk to that boy.
Don't judge Scooter too quick. He looks rough and talks rough, but he's never had much chance to be otherwise. I'd like him to get that chance.
All I want to do is talk. Maybe there's something he's forgotten to tell.
Andy led Rusty toward the cook tent.
I hope you weren't mad at me, leaving sudden like I did. Len was going to report to the Rangers, and it seemed like a good idea to ride along with him.
You're old enough to know your own mind. I wasn't any older the first time I joined.
Andy showed Rusty a boy he took to be in his teens, peeling potatoes for the black cook. A dark scowl showed his opinion of the job.
Boy, there's just too much tater going out in them peels.
The youngster flourished the knife as if threatening to use it for a weapon.
There'll be an old darky throwed out with them peels, too, if you don't leave me the hell alone.
Captain says you gotta work if you gonna eat. Otherwise, he's fixing to send you where he sent them friends of yours. It'll be a long time before they see freedom.
I'd be in better company than what I got here.
I swear, young'un, I don't know what to do with you.
You don't have to do nothing. Just let me be.
Rusty gave Andy a quizzical look.
You really think you can reform that?
You reformed me?
I don't remember you ever sassed me that bad.
I'd about forgotten how to talk English. By the time I learned it again, I'd smarten up. Bo, can I borrow your helper a little while?
Borrow him? You can keep him. He ain't much help to me.
Andy introduced Rusty.
Scooter, this is the man who raised me after I came back from the Indians.
Scooter gave no sign that he was impressed. To Rusty, he was a freckle-faced ragamuffin in donated ranger clothes so large they swallowed him up. His hair was badly in need of barbering. His eyes were his only outstanding feature. Brown and dark as coffee beans, they seemed to be searching for a fight.
I want to ask you about Corey Bascom.
I already told them all I know. They've asked me 20 times.
Didn't he give you any idea where he was going when he left you?
Didn't even say he was leaving. Just pulled out. Told Arliss and them it was a fool idea trying to steal horses from the Rangers. Wasn't having no part of it.
What direction did he go?
I didn't watch. For all I know, he went straight up.
Andy gave Rusty a quiet look that said it was no use. Corey Bascom was too cagey to tell his plans to a kid he had just met. Even if the boy knew more, which was unlikely, he had no intention of sharing it. Rusty sent him back to his potato peeling. In a show of rebellion, Scooter cut the first skin even thicker than before and flipped it at the cook.
Young'un, I'd like to get a picture hold of you, the Fire and Brimstone Baptist.
Rusty and Andy looked at one another.
Preacher Webb.
Preacher's getting too old to take on a wildcat like this.
But you're not.
Don't try to push that job off onto me. I've already been down that road once with you.
I turned out pretty good, didn't I?
This boy isn't you. Like as not, he'd run off the first chance he got. And if he didn't, he'd make me wish he had.
Think about it, at least. Don't be quick to say no.
I've already said it.
I'd better go out and finish my turn on horse guard. See you about supper.
I see that Farley Brackett hasn't talked you out of Long Red.
He knows he'd be wasting his breath.
After watching Andy ride out to where the Ranger's extra horses were loose-herded on the grass, Rusty had headed back to the captain's tent.
I understand you raised Private Pickard.
Mostly he raised himself, after the Comanches. I just tried to point him in the right direction from time to time and keep him from getting killed.
Now, he has a notion he can do the same for that vagabond kid. I'm afraid he's letting himself in for a terrible disappointment. A tree grows as the sapling is bent. This boy has been bent the wrong way too long.
I guess Andy feels that he owes me, and the way to pay the debt is to do for somebody else what I did for him.
That speaks well for his intentions, if not his judgment. Supper time. You'll have a meal and stay the night with us, won't you, Shannon?
So you can keep trying to recruit me?
You've already said no. I'll not make a nuisance of myself.
And I'll be glad to stay. Reminds me of old times.
The Rangers gathered around, filling their plates from pots and Dutch ovens. The captain glanced about.
Bo, where's your young helper?
Ain't no helper of mine. Sneaked off every chance he gets. Didn't finish half the spuds I gave him to peel. You ever looked at his neck?
I can't say that I have.
He got a ring around it. Born for a hangman's noose, if you ask me.
Oh, that's just dirt.
After supper, Len Tanner and two other rangers rode out to bring the horses up close to camp and relieve Andy of guard duty. The horses came in, and the rangers, but Rusty saw nothing of Andy. He walked up to Tanner's horse.
Where's Andy?
Didn't see him. The horses were scattered more than they ought to have been. It ain't like Andy to have rode off and left them.
No, it's not. Wait till I get my horse. We'll go out and look for him.
Jim and Johnny Morris joined them without having to be asked. They reached the area where the horses had grazed.
Me and Johnny will split off and go around this way.
Rusty jerked his head at Tanner.
We'll take the other side.
He had ridden about 200 yards when he saw Andy rise up out of the grass and stagger to his feet. Rusty saw a bloody streak down Andy's forehead, all the way to his jaw. Andy swayed as if about to fall. Rusty quickly dismounted and caught him.
Andy, did Long Red fall and throw you?
Wasn't Long Red. It was Scooter.
That kid?
Looks like somebody gave him a six-shooter shampoo.
Twice. You wouldn't think a boy that small could hit so hard.
I've been warning you about him. A little rattlesnake can bite you as bad as a big one.
Let's get him back to camp. He can tell us about it there.
Jim and Johnny Morris galloped up at that moment.
We found tracks of a horse headed off yonder way.
He took Long Red.
Thieving little coyote.
Said the captain wanted to see me right away. He had stolen a pistol somewhere. Soon as I let him swing up behind me, he hit me over the head with it and shoved me out of the saddle. Then he hit me again for good measure. Next thing I remember was Rusty riding toward me.
Ungrateful little whelp. He'd already be in jail if it wasn't for you.
Not much chance of catching him now. It'll be dark pretty quick. By morning, there's no telling how far I'll be gone.
And on my horse.
Andy's head throbbed so painfully that there were moments when he thought he might die. There were other moments when he feared he might not. He expected the captain to lecture him on his misspent sympathy for a wayward boy, but evidently the officer decided the experience was lesson enough in itself. At daylight, the captain detailed the Morris brothers and another ranger to find Long Red's tracks and determine if they could be followed. By late afternoon, the men were back. They had lost the trail. Andy had expected Rusty to start home, but instead he remained in camp. For the time being, at least, he was more concerned about Andy than about trying to find Corey Bascom. Andy was sick at heart, partly from loss of the sorrel horse, but more from the realization that his good intention toward Scooter had gone for nothing. He felt betrayed. He kept wondering if he might have done more, done better. In a way he could not analyze, he even felt that he had let Rusty down. Rusty had taken a chance on Andy against long odds a long time ago. What Andy had tried to do for Scooter had been meant as an oblique thank you to Rusty. Rusty seated himself on the ground near the spread-out blankets on which Andy lay, a wet cloth across his forehead.
If it's any consolation to you, Farley Brackett is mad as hell. He says if anybody deserved to steal that sorrel horse, it was him.
Everybody kept telling me. I thought I could change Scooter the way you changed me.
Maybe it was in his blood. More likely it's because he's been mistreated all his life. Beat a young horse every day and he'll outlaw on you. He'll reach a point where there's nothing much you can do except shoot him. Else he's liable to kill you. That boy was ruined before you ever saw him.
I guess. I just hoped for better.
Look at the fugitive list the captain has. Most of the men on it had mothers and daddies who did the best they could to make something out of them. Somewhere, every one of them came to a fork in the road and took the wrong direction. Most of them will never turn around. They'll stay on the Devil's Road till it leads them to the cemetery.
You figure that's the case with Scooter?
He'll end up on the fugitive list if he lives that long.
After 2 days, Andy felt much better. He expected Rusty to start home, but Rusty showed no inclination to leave. He said he was hanging on a few days longer, hoping some word might come about Corey Bascom. Andy suspected one strong reason was that he enjoyed the ranger's company and the camp life that reminded him of other times. Whatever the cause, Andy was comforted by Rusty's presence. The third day after Scooter ran away, Andy saw a horse gallop into the edge of camp, lathered with sweat. The rider pulled up in front of the headquarters tent and dismounted, so exhausted he almost went to his knees.
Captain!
The captain hurried out of his tent to meet the man.
Indians, Captain! We got Indian trouble!
I hoped I'd never have to face this.
You had to know it was bound to come.
The captain called the company together. He turned to Sergeant Holloway.
How many men could be ready to go right away?
We have 4 out on detail. Leaving a few to guard the camp, we have a dozen available men at best, sir, including ourselves.
Very well. Send the detail to bring up the horses.
Farley Brackett had not spoken directly to Andy since Scooter had absconded with the sorrel horse. Andy was conscious now of Farley watching him.
Somebody's got to help guard the camp. If you don't feel right about this, why don't you stay? Tell the captain you're still not up to a hard ride.
I took an oath. Whatever Captain gives me to do, I'll do it.
Would you feel better if I went along?
You're not a ranger anymore. It ain't your fight.
If there's people been killed, it's everybody's fight.
Grim-faced, the captain approached Rusty.
Shannon, we are short-handed, as you can see. Now, you have no obligation to us, and I would not be so bold as to ask you. But if you should decide to ride with us on your own free will,
I would happily accept your company. I can't promise that state will pay you for your services.
Half the time I was a ranger, I didn't get paid for it. I'm not asking for anything now.
Spoken like a true Texan. Andy, perhaps you should remain here.
I heal fast. I'll go.
Andy knew the chances of Indians hitting this camp were remote. The report had them many miles to the north, where they had hit a group of cowboys on roundup and had driven off a substantial number of cattle, as well as horses.
I can't figure what the Comanches would want with cattle. Their preference runs to buffalo.
The cattle are for trade, not eating, Braggett. They drive them north to the canyon country and swap them to Comanchero traders for white man goods. They don't know much about money, but they know how to trade. They've been doing it a long time.
You be the one to know.
The rangers pushed their horses as much as they dared, stopping to camp at dusk. Andy was tired, his head aching. Rusty, on the other hand, seemed rejuvenated.
I feel like I never left the rangers. It's like I've stepped back into the old days at Fort Belknap.
The captain would be tickled to have you sign on permanent.
I might if it wasn't for Corey Bascom and the farm.
People like Bascom generally come to a bad end. Sooner or later, he'll try to rob the wrong outfit, and somebody will blow his light out. It doesn't have to be you.
If it happens that way, well and good. But if it fell to me to be the one, well, I owe him for Josie.
You think you have to kill him before she can be at rest?
No. Before I can be at rest.
The ranch was little more than a rough cow camp, its few structures having picket walls and dirt-covered roofs. Its owners clearly intended it to be temporary. None of the cowboys had been killed, but the outfit had been shot up and had lost most of its horses, including several with saddles on. The wagon boss walked out to meet the rangers. His left arm rested in a sling made of tarpaulin torn from a wagon sheet. His face reddened as he described the incident.
They caught us flat-footed. The boys all scattered around the herd, took cattle, horses. Even the camp dog followed and never came back.
I'm sorry we don't have a doctor.
Oh, we taking care of ourselves. The arm don't hurt near as much as losing the outfit. I'm madder than hell. At them, at us. Well, I'm even a little mad at you for not being here when it happened.
I suppose you're entitled. Would any of you like to ride with us?
Ah, we ain't got but two men still on horseback, and they're still raring to go. It's been all I could do to keep them from chasing off after the engines alone. As for the rest, a cowboy with no horse is a sorry sight to behold.
The rangers tarried only long enough to water their mounts and for the two hands to saddle up and join them. The cowboys led the way to where the attack had taken place. Holloway spoke to the captain.
If they'd just taken horses, they'd be hard to catch up with. But the cattle will slow them down a right smart.
That is our main hope. Otherwise, they would probably be out of our reach already.
A trail left by stolen horses could sometimes be difficult to follow. But to hide the tracks of a cattle herd was impossible. Andy could have followed it with one eye shut. The Indians must have been confident that the cowboys would not be able to follow and chastise them. It was possible they were unaware so far of the rangers' reinstatement. In the past, they had feared rangers more than the army or civilian volunteers. They'd regarded rangers as a warrior society of unyielding determination and fearsome power. The trail became fresher, the tracks cleanly cut, the droppings soft and still warm enough that Andy could smell them. For a while now, the rangers had been coming across young calves the Indians had left behind because they couldn't keep up the pace. Andy's nerves tightened at the sound of the stolen cattle. He saw Rusty quietly slip the rifle from beneath his leg and bring it up to the pommel of his saddle.
If anybody feels like communing with his maker, this would be the proper time.
Any orders, Captain?
Just one, Sergeant. When we see that they've spotted us, charge! Don't give them time to take count.
Sounds like old Captain Whitfield. Bible in one saddlebag, whiskey in the other. He was hell on horseback.
The Comanches had three men trailing the herd as a rear guard. They appeared surprised by the sight of the rangers riding up over a stretch of rising ground. They hesitated for a moment, seemingly undecided whether to stand and give fight or run and give warning. All three quickly took off at a fast gallop.
We caught him asleep! Let's wake him up!
The rangers split around the herd. The cattle spooked at first, splitting off in various directions. Andy thought there might be 100 of them. The animals stopped their forward movement once the rangers pulled back together beyond the herd. Ahead, Andy saw dust kicked up by the remuda. The Indians were whipping them into a run. The two cowboys, eagerly responding to sight of their quarry, pulled ahead of the rangers.
Let's try and catch up to those cowboys. They're liable to get themselves into a fix.
Farley Brackett pushed his horse into a run that put him a little ahead of Andy and Rusty. The Indians stopped running. Having stampeded the stolen horses, they pulled together into a defensive line. Rough counting by twos, Andy guessed they numbered 20 or so. They looked like a solid wall.
Don't hit him head on! Cut around the end!
The flanking maneuver momentarily confused the Comanches, but the surprise did not last long. They broke out of the line, made for a stand of timber. Several hung back, fighting a rear guard action. The vanguard of the Indians reached the timber and turned to mount a defense.
Smite him, hip and thigh!
The Rangers lost any semblance of a line. They plunged into the timber by ones and twos. The combat was almost hand to hand. Andy saw several Comanches who offered good targets, but he could not bring his pistol to bear on them. He became aware that Farley had gotten himself isolated out to one side and the full attention of three warriors. His horse was down. The ranger dodged among the trees afoot. Farley stood a strong chance of being killed.
You're...
Two warriors disappeared into the heavier growth. The third appeared determined to bring Farley down. Farley tripped over a deadfall limb. The Indian rushed his horse toward him, drawing back an arrow in his bow. Farley turned over onto his back, eyes desperate. The Indian turned, swinging the point of the arrow toward Andy. Andy saw the face, recognized it. Holding his breath, his skin afire, he aimed his pistol, then let it drift to the warrior's left. Andy shot and missed. So did the arrow. The Indian turned his horse away and followed the others into the trees. Ashen-faced, Farley struggled to his feet. He picked up the weapon he had dropped and quickly glanced around.
Let's get out of here before they decide to come back!
Andy extended his arm. Farley grabbed it and swung up behind the saddle.
Where's the rest of the Rangers?
I lost sight of them in the trees. Whichever way we go, we're liable to run into Indians.
Well, let's go someplace, even if it's wrong. I don't like it here at all.
Which way?
Back out of this timber to where we can see something. I felt the devil's breath on my neck. Had the smell of brimstone.
Andy waited for Farley to thank him, but soon concluded it was going to be a long wait.
You got a reputation as a good shot. Wasn't no reason for you to have missed that Indian.
It's hard to hit a target when you're whipping through the timber.
Especially when it's a Comanche. Friend of yours?
Andy did not reply. He reined up at the edge of the trees, hoping to see the other Rangers. He heard a running horse, whirled around. The Comanche warrior was almost upon him, arrow drawn back. Andy raised his pistol at the same time that the warrior released his arrow. The arrow drove into Andy's shoulder, knocking him back against Farley. He would have fallen had Farley not held him. Shock was instant. Andy's head reeled, his stomach turned over. He was aware that the Indian had fallen from his horse and lay in a twisted heap. His face was turned upward, his dying eyes open. Andy recognized him. He was from Steel's the Ponies band. Brackett held Andy in the saddle.
Don't you fall, boy. You're liable to drive that arrow plumb through. I don't want two dead Indians on my hands.
Through a red haze, Andy saw several rangers ride out of the timber, driving some of the reclaimed horses. Half a dozen Indians came out in an effort to head them off. They quickly spotted Andy and Farley and moved toward them. More Indians appeared behind, blocking escape.
Hang on! We're fixing to ride like hell! Out of the way, you dog-eating sons of bitches!
Comanches don't eat dog.
The Indians pulled apart, letting Brackett pass between them, then shooting at him in vain. Rangers circled protectively around him and Andy.
Lift him down. We've got to get that arrow out.
The horses are getting away.
To hell with the horses. Come on, boy. All right.
Several hands eased Andy from the saddle and lowered him onto his back in the grass.
A couple of you hold him down. I sure hope that arrowhead ain't barbed. Grit your teeth, Andy. This won't be any fun.
I'm already...
Andy felt as if he was spinning backward, sinking into a bottomless well that blazed with flame, then went dark. The hurting diminished, but he was briefly at peace. Rusty examined the arrow.
The point is broken off. I'm afraid it still may be in there, too deep to dig for.
Andy's sense of peace was shattered by searing pain as Rusty cauterized the wound with a red-hot knife blade.
I'm sorry. I had it done to me once, and I know it hurts like hell. But out in the field, there's no other choice.
Consciousness slipped away again.
Well, maybe we can fix up some sort of drag like the Indians do.
Too bumpy a ride. Liable to kill him. Let's cut down a couple of those small trees. We'll make a stretcher.
Andy had a sense of floating on air. It took some time for him to realize that the Rangers had rigged a makeshift stretcher with blankets and poles. He was being carried between two horses. The ends of the poles were tied into stirrups on each side. The wound in his shoulder felt as if a fire were burning in it. His mouth was so dry that when he ran his tongue over his lips, he felt no moistening. Rusty rode alongside him.
Now lay still, else you're liable to get that blood started again. We like to have not got it stopped in the first place.
I killed the Comanche.
You didn't have a choice. He was set on killing you.
But I knew him. He was one of my people.
Maybe he knew you too. That didn't stop him from coming after you. Farley said...
Farley. If I hadn't gone to pull him out of a tight spot, I wouldn't have had to kill anybody.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. Another way is to realize that Farley saved your life too. He held on to you and got you out of there.
Where is Farley?
Helping drive the cattle. We got him back. Some of the horses, too.
Anybody killed?
Not on our side. A couple of boys were wounded a little, but not as bad as you. Can't say about the Indians.
Andy closed his eyes. He kept seeing the man he had killed. It was a face he knew. He did not want to remember the name, but it came nevertheless. The warrior had been known as Bugling Elk.
Hang on. I know it hurts.
It was not the wound that hurt most.
There's something else. It's good news in a way, and it's also bad.
How can it be both?
We found a sorrel horse amongst those we got back from the Indians. He's your Long Red.
What about Scooter?
We'd have to figure that the Indians got him.
Andy wanted to cry, but he was too old for it. Corey Bascom studied the cards he had dealt himself, then looked across the table into his adversary's eyes. He searched for a flicker of emotion that might betray the quality of the cowboy's poker hand. He saw a fleeting disappointment quickly covered. He bet, and the cowboy folded, as had two other players before him. Corey had smiled little since learning of Alice's death. He did not smile now, smothering a momentary elation over winning. The penny ante bank out at Brownwood had not been as flush as expected, and a four-way split had left him only a few days' traveling money. Since coming to Fort Worth, he had more than doubled his stake, however. The lamp-lighted poker tables in Hell's Half Acre had been good to him. They usually were. In recent years, Fort Worth had become his favorite place to go for liquor, women, and some rewarding poker. Here, trail outfits on their way to Kansas resupplied for the long trip that still faced them. Their cowboys grabbed a last chance to see the elephant and buck the tiger before beginning the last long leg of their trip north. They often stopped again on their way home. For a man better than average at manipulating the pasteboards, it was a good place to pad out his role so long as he didn't pit himself against the real professionals from places like Chicago and Kansas City. The district's rowdy action had long offered temporary relief from his family's stifling influence. Though Bessie Bascom was his mother, and he had the affection for her a dutiful son should, she often rubbed him raw like burrs in his underwear. An occasional visit to Hell's Half Acre was akin to a safety valve on a steam boiler. It had been several weeks since he had left the family, bitter that Lacey had shot Alice on his mother's orders. He had to leave, for had he stayed, he might have killed Lacey. The temptation had been strong. His bitterness had only deepened since. For a time, he had lost his grip to a point of feeling suicidal. He had provoked a fight with a gambler whose skill with a gun he knew was superior to his own. The son of a bitch had clubbed him to the floor with a heavy barrel of a Colt Navy revolver, but had left him alive. Perhaps he had recognized Corey's brief madness for what it was and chose not to take advantage of it. The close encounter with death had been shock enough to revive Corey's desire for life. He had wandered without purpose, always aware that local law enforcement might be on the lookout for him because of past offenses. Here, in this raucous section of Fort Worth, he felt relatively secure. Its peace officers were not inclined to be foolhardy. Some had a financial stake in the prosperity of Hell's Half Acre, exacting a percentage on the take as protection money. Several were known to own a substantial interest in some of the district's illicit enterprises. They were selective in their diligence as keepers of the law. Others, who had no financial axe to grind, were nevertheless aware of their own mortality and did not arbitrarily poke at hornets' nests. Before he met Alice, Corey had invested enough in commercial female companionship to have bought a small ranch. Since her death, the notion had repelled him. Odd, he thought. He had never expected one woman to take such a hold on him that he lost interest in all others. He had tried a couple of nights ago to break Alice's spell by going upstairs with a dark-eyed, raven-haired beauty who affected a French accent and claimed to be from New Orleans. To his dismay, he had not been able to get past her doorway. He had never thought about ghosts enough to believe or disbelieve. Now, he wondered if Alice's ghost might be riding on his shoulders. Well, that New Orleans queen was probably just from Arkansas anyway. Fort Smith, more than likely.
You gonna play or just daydream about it?
The other players had shoved back from the table, but the cowboy evidently had not yet lost all of his money. Corey felt honor-bound to oblige him and see that he did not leave here overburdened. He signaled the barkeep to bring the cowboy a fresh drink and resumed the game. As his pile grew and the cowboy's shrank, Corey became aware that a couple of men were watching him with more than casual interest. Their clothes were threadbare and dirty, as if they'd been sleeping beneath a porch or in a haystack. He knew the breed on sight. Two-bit foot pads and pickpockets, feeding on the fringes of the real action like dogs prowling under a table in search of scraps fallen to the floor. He sensed also that they had picked him as a target. Unless he stayed and played until dawn, he eventually had to leave the lamplight and venture out into the darkness. There they would pounce on him like coyotes on a rabbit. Well, boys, he thought, you may be coyotes, but I ain't no rabbit. The cowboy threw in his final hand with a gesture of disgust.
Whew, you just cleaned my plow.
Corey gave him back $5.
Well, never like to see a man leave the table dead broke.
The cowboy hesitated. Pride told him to refuse. Practicality told him to take it. He took it. Corey cast a quick glance at the two thugs. They were still watching him.
Cowboy, step over to the bar and I'll buy you a drink. How'd you like to earn some of your money back?
How? There ain't much I know how to do except on horseback. I just proved I ain't no poker player.
Well, this won't take any skill. All you have to do is go out that door and start walking.
I was fixing to do that anyway. What's the catch?
Now, don't look around. Just look in the mirror back of the bar. See those two ginks yonder in the corner? One's got a black wool hat, the other one's wearing a cap. He probably stole off a railroad conductor.
I see them.
I think they got it in mind to lift my roll. I'd like to see them disappointed.
Then you'd ought to get you a policeman. I'm just a drover.
Any policeman I'd find around here, maybe a friend of theirs. I want you to walk out ahead of me, and then wait for me just out of the lamplight.
Are you fixing to use me for a decoy?
They won't hurt you. I won't give them a chance.
I wouldn't do this if it wasn't for the money. If you let them kill me, I'll be mad as all hell.
Don't worry. I'll be right behind you.
So will they. Oh, well, I'd probably get drowned anyway when we reach the Red River.
Corey watched the drover walk to the door, then paused to look back at the would-be robbers. He feared that might arouse their suspicion, but the thugs were paying no attention to the cowboy. Their gaze was fixed on Corey. He nodded a silent goodnight to the bartender, then strode at a leisurely pace across the room and out onto the wooden sidewalk. The cowboy awaited Corey just beyond the lamplight that fell upon the dirt street.
Here, swap hats with me. And start walking yonder way. Walk slow and stay out of the light.
Corey ducked into a dark passageway between the saloon and a mercantile store.
There he goes. Let's catch him before he gets to that next street lamp.
The two footpads passed Corey's hiding place, but didn't glance in his direction. He stepped out behind them. Without a word, he swung his pistol and slammed it against the woolen hat. The second robber spun around, a small derringer in his hand. Corey struck the pistol barrel down across the man's hairy knuckles.
Ow!
He jammed the muzzle of his six-gun into the man's wide-open mouth.
If you don't want me to blow all your teeth out, you raise those hands.
The thug's hand shot into the air.
Thud, thud!
Hey, cowboy! You can come back now.
The cowboy looked down at the robber crumpled on the sidewalk.
You must have scared him to death. I didn't hear you shoot.
Yeah, just gave him a Sam Coat massage. You come around directly. Search this one. Be sure he doesn't have another gun on him.
The cowboy found no weapon. Corey poked the muzzle into the thug's stomach.
Are you a fast runner?
The robber tried to answer but couldn't summon a voice.
Let's find out. I'll let you start running. I'll count to five, then shoot. Now go!
Yes, sir!
The bullet slammed into a wall just behind the running man. Corey knelt and went through the fallen robber's pockets. He found a watch and some folding money.
I bet you don't even have a pocket watch, cowboy. Here, take this one.
Corey picked up the derringer. It was an over-and-under model that allowed two shots.
How'd you like an extra gun?
I wouldn't even shoot a rabbit with that little thing. It'd probably make him mad enough to come after me with his teeth bared.
Well, I'll keep it. Never know when something like this might come in handy.
Corey was a little surprised that the shot didn't attract curious onlookers. It took more than a single shot to excite the citizens of Hell's Half Acre. He counted off roughly half the money he had won from the drover.
Much obliged for the help, cowboy. Like a little advice?
As long as it don't cost me nothing.
Well, maybe it'll save you something. Stick to playing Mumbledy Peg. Poker ain't your game.